The Fan on Demand.
Hockey Central live from the Stanley Cup playoffs continues from Tampa Bay ahead of Game 2 between the Canadiens and the Lightning. Welcome to Section 120 at the Times Forum. Darren Millard along with Nick Kiprios, Doug McLean, and Scott Morrison. Seven of the eight series are now underway, and we've had three overtime games, including a thrilling one last night, triple overtime between the St. Louis Blues and the Chicago Blackhawks. A recap of what happened last night, also a look ahead to the three games tonight, including the debut of the Boston Bruins and the Detroit Red Wings, who will play Game 1. But three overtimes so far in Game 1s already. It's shaping up to be one of those playoffs.
Not very goaltender friendly.
No.
To start the Stanley Cup playoffs. Some issues going on. Ryan Miller almost having a Carey Price kind of game where you question what's going on and then the light switch goes off for these guys. And Ryan Miller was absolutely fantastic in the overtimes, critical saves, and that's where you truly draw in your experience.
Much like the Price situation in the game with Montreal, both comparable that they gave up goals early, and then as the game progressed, it was a similar thing. It was amazing, and that's experience. That's you would expect it from Miller as a veteran. You might not expect it from a Price, a guy that struggled at times in the playoffs.
Well, three goals on seven shots. How nervous do you think the Blues were when that scenario was unfolding? But then, as you say, shut the door. Yeah. 35 saves after that. So I'm not totally surprised by the overtimes, because when we've looked at the matchups, so tight. I mean, just a small difference between these teams and all the matchups. So I think we could see a lot of them this spring.
It looked to me like the Blues weren't a very confident group early in that game. And then as the game wore on the third period, they really started to take control of it, and then the overtime was pretty even. Chicago, though,
they still
got
needed
some
a
talent.
Late goal from Jaden Schwartz,
right? And they had some, they had chances. Crawford stood tall, but I'll tell you what, they're a talented group. When you watch Kane and Taves get it going,
you wonder what a loss would have done to St. Louis's mindset.
Totally.
I mean,
would have been seven in a row.
You don't lose a series in Game 1, but at home, and you've already lost six in a row, as you just said, coming into it. And you just wonder if that is the one game that can turn this thing around for St. Louis. We know they've gotten healthier. Mm-hmm. Backus was a horse again last night. Mm-hmm. Are they now a team that can truly contend in the Western Conference once again?
And Tarasenko was back and got a goal for them. So, I mean, in fairness to them, as we talked about, during that six-game losing streak, they were missing seven forwards. It's absolutely devastating on the injury front. Couldn't score any goals, so to get to four last night is a big boost all around.
And I'll tell you what, Miller's going to have to be a star, because they've got so much firepower in Chicago. Taves, how is he going to respond today after the tough hit he took late in that game? He got belted.
Yeah.
You hope he's going to be able to be back and be strong, because Hossa looked powerful last night at times. Kane looked real good. So, I mean, Chicago's going to get better, too, as the series goes on.
Regardless, it's a punishing series.
Oh, I think,
who hit Backus? Was that Chalmerson just smoked him along the boards? And you wonder, regardless of who comes out of this series, what's going to be left of them to go three more rounds potentially?
They're going to be bruised. There's going to be a lot of damage inflicted in this series to the survivor and ultimately the loser as well.
It's Hockey Central presented by Lexus on the Park and Sportsnet 590 The Fan, as well on Sportsnet Television, sportsnet.ca. Any explanation of why we're seeing all these goals, Scott?
I don't know. I mean, you look at some of the matchups and great goaltending. You see a Minnesota team that's airtight defensively during the regular season, and they give up a whack and score for themselves. And normally, typically, they win that game going away. So I don't know how you explain it. Maybe the opening night jitters.
I don't see the trend continuing, because we do know what coaching staffs are, and maybe Mac, you can talk about this, but the adjustments that will be made, the video that will be shown. It's great for the league. I think it's great for the fans, but it's not great for coaching staff.
Man, seriously, when's the last time you saw a guy like Quick get pulled? I mean, what did he get? He was pulled after five? I mean, seriously, this guy is a one or two goal against guy per game. I mean, I understand a Brescalov, because he's either hot or he's cold. Varlamov, young, inexperienced. Here, inexperienced, and a Price who's had to challenge at playoff time. So you can explain in some situations, but across the board, it's pretty weird.
New York Rangers pull away from the Philadelphia Flyers in a third period in which they capitalized on the power play, but that didn't seem like a 4-1 game to me.
No, but you look at Philadelphia, and they were able to get an early lead, which was great. And we talked about this the other day going into this series, is the lack of success with Giroux, Hartnell, and Voracek against the New York Rangers. And this line was held to, I think, 2 shots on goal.
Well, I think they only had 15 as a team.
And the trend continues here. Philly will go nowhere if Giroux doesn't find a way to get hot.
But let's be fair here. This was a pick 'em game until that 4-minute penalty. I mean, it was, you know, in the third period, we got a 1-1 game, and all of a sudden you get a 4-minute penalty, and Brad Richards made some spectacular plays. Brad Richards, Steppen, Nash, I mean, they made some unbelievable plays to score those 2 power play goals and to get the 3rd power play goal. So essentially, it was a 1-1 game to that double minor, and it was a good call, deserved penalty. It felt for the kid, but that turned the game around. That was a 1-1 game, and yeah, Giroux and them were snuffed out. But what was it, 8 minutes left in the game when that 4-minute penalty happened?
Rangers didn't give up much on the night, that's for sure. But and a good sign for New York's perspective. Richards, as you say, some good plays, 3 points on the night. San Luis, 2 assists. So those are great positives for them.
And the other thing, Mason skates today. They'll decide if he's able to go in game 2. Is there a chance he can go? But he was going to skate today and said they would know after practice whether they thought he had a chance.
Nick, what is it about MSG that bothers the Philadelphia Flyers so much? Because it's getting to be a ridiculous
9 in
stat.
A row.
You know what?
It's not the easiest building to play in. I can tell you that. I've done it on a number of occasions with Washington and then Hartford. It's an intimidating place. It's one of those places where you don't want the team to get behind them early because it's something that can snowball. And right now there's a belief there that for the players that it's a huge advantage and they're making the most of it.
Does it really get inside your head?
It is a tough building.
Does it get inside your head as an athlete?
I think anything can get in your head as an athlete. But buildings on the road, it's a marquee building, let's face it.
But it's a special thing for the New York fans when it's Philadelphia. They hate them. I mean, it's been going on since the early 70s where it's absolutely vicious. The Ranger fans hate everybody, but they hate the Flyers just a little more than everybody else.
Yeah, it can be a wild building. They're not the most polite fans in the National Hockey League in New York, that's
Remember
for sure.
Remember sitting in the press box where you were right with the fans right above you? Oh, my God, it was vicious up there.
So how important is it that Steve Mason does come back and play in this series?
I think it's very important.
Can they win with Ray Emery? We don't think so.
I mean, it makes it a bigger challenge. Let's put it that way. You never say never, but I think it makes it a bigger challenge. And Mason was great for that team this season. And it's not often, we've talked about it before, it's not often that you equate great goaltending with Philadelphia over the years, a long time ago. So I think it's very important that he gets back.
When you start a series, especially in the first round with a backup goalie, with the potential you may have a backup goalie, your long-term future, unless it's a Rogie Vanshott type story where he came out of Thetford Mines and did it for
Junior
Montreal
B goalie.
Or Steve Penny, it just doesn't happen, and when it does, it's historic. So I look at the Lightning here, I look at the Philadelphia Flyers. There's nothing worse can happen to your team than not have your number one goalie to start the playoffs.
Been several of these instances so far in these playoffs when you examine what's happened with the Anaheim Ducks and Frederik Andersen is the backup going, Philadelphia Flyers, Tampa Bay Lightning.
Anaheim did it by choice.
By choice, but
a little
still.
Bit different. Whereas, Tampa didn't have a choice, Philadelphia didn't have a choice. And to your point, when you have to start your backup, you don't have necessarily a viable option should it not work.
The San Jose Sharks drill the LA Kings in a very unexpected game one between these two clubs. Not only all the goals, but also the Sharks, the way they were playing and limped into the playoffs, didn't look to be on top of their game. And that's an instance where it's rare that you see a team just be able to flip a switch like that.
It's almost kind of, you look at Dallas against Anaheim, and you say if Dallas had probably another 5 more minutes left on the clock, that they could have completely erased a 3-0 deficit. San Jose got a few more goals than than the Dallas game, but there was almost a feel like, okay, we see San Jose for two periods, and then we see him in the third, and L.A. came back, and it's almost as if L.A.'s kicking themselves, much like Dallas was, and saying, okay, why did we show up so late? And the good news for both those clubs is it's game one, and despite losing, I think there's a feel coming off the back end of the games that says, okay, boys, let's just start earlier, and we'll be fine.
What about Daryl Sutter's comment post-game saying, I didn't prepare them very well to start the game. When's the last time you've heard a coach at playoff time say that? I mean, typically you'd be ticked off. I mean, you hold what you say, but for him to come out and say, I didn't prepare them very well for this game is unusual.
Well, does he take the heat off his players?
Well, that's
maybe
what he did.
Maybe if you did that that's a few more times in your career, you'd still be coaching.
I might have had a different message dressing room.
I said if I didn't have Nick Kyprios on my team, we would have played better.
San Jose and St. Louis, did those two teams need game one more than the other six in these playoffs?
Totally did. St. Louis, especially with the way they finished, as we just talked about. Dallas are the underdog. They're one of the biggest underdog of this playoff round, in my opinion. I mean, because their two best players are two kids and had tremendous years, but their kids, Lettinen, has never got it done in the playoffs. They're not a deep team. Let's be honest. They're, to me, if they win, if they make this a series, they've had a great playoff.
You know what? I think they feel good about going into game two.
Yeah.
I really do. Just, you know, and again, it has more to do with knowing that they played well to finish off the game, and they gave themselves a chance.
Yeah.
They got themselves back in the game, and that's not an easy thing to do against a team that was so successful during the regular season.
And them and Columbus feel good about losing game one. Unfortunately, if you lose game two, you're essentially done.
And to your point about San Jose and St. Louis, two teams with huge expectations to go deep this spring, starting on home ice, coming off dreadful finishes to the regular season. I think having that confidence booster is really key. Yeah.
Okay, Colorado rallies against the Minnesota Wild in another 5-4 overtime game. Start with Nathan MacKinnon, who had 5 points in that Memorial Cup championship game last year and then begins his NHL playoff career with 3 points. I'm talking.
He's good.
No, I'm talking.
This just in.
Not just that.
Tick, 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 tick.
But raising the level of his game and a big game, big stage performer.
He's as important to that lineup as anybody else, and it's hard to believe that he stepped out of junior, and of course we saw him at the Memorial Cup, and we knew it. We saw it that it was him and everybody else at that Memorial Cup. I still can't believe that he's been as dominant as we've seen at the National Hockey League level less than 12 months out of junior. It's remarkable. That's one game that obviously slips from Minnesota. Brizgalov, again, a huge question mark. And I know you mentioned that they didn't have the money to go get anyone else, but you got to spend money to make money.
He's been good for them, though.
He wasn't good in game one, okay? When a puck goes through you in overtime, that's not a good thing.
But you know what? MacKinnon was a story. There's no doubt with his 3 assists. But also another guy that's been in the shadows all year is Stastny. And he gets the winner.
Who they hung on to.
Who they hung on to and decided they were going to take a chance to sign him at a reasonable price. But he came through big time. And that bodes well because you didn't need all the other guys to be the stars. Landeskog had a heck of a game, but if they can survive this round, and I think they will, and get Duchesne back, they could be tough.
Yeah, Stastny gets the tying goal, then the overtime winner.
Totally.
And we talked about how would Patrick Waugh put his fingerprints on this series the way he started the season with, you know, pushing the glass and everything. How about pulling the goalie with, 3 minutes to go? You don't see that very often.
No.
And a very similar situation to the Olympic women's hockey final.
Well, yeah, almost
an empty netter. Yes. They rescue it, and then they come down, and they manage to tie it and win it in overtime. But if you want to talk about the most exciting teams to watch, Colorado is right up there with anybody else.
I think it's their team speed. You watch them, and I don't think there's a faster team in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
And that's without Duchesne, who's their fastest guy in their team. They're missing their fastest guy, and they're still fast. That's how fast they are.
Fast and skilled. And fun to watch, to your point.
Varlamov gives up four goals,
right.
And Minnesota's kicking themselves, much like I'm sure Tampa Bay is.
Totally.
Whether or not you are you going to be able to score four goals a night? And if you do, you better win it.
Well, I'm not sure Minnesota, you know, they're not an offensive team. Yeah, scoring four against Varlamov is not as daunting a proposition as trying to get four again against a Carey Price, for instance. But that was a great opportunity to Minnesota let get away.
Highly unlikely that'll happen again in the Stanley Cup
I would say,
first
yes.
round for Carey Price. This team, Tampa, they're going to have to find a different way to win.
Of the seven games that we've seen so far, what really jumps out at you when you examine overall play, team play, and individual play? To me, it's all the goals that we've seen.
Yeah.
It's all the goals, and it's also all the chances we've seen. I mean, when have we looked at a first night of a playoff game and saw scoring chance after scoring chance and loose defensive play? I mean, you don't typically see that at playoff time. And it has been loose. It's been ugly. It's been, and I'm leaning more on the game we watched live, obviously. It was an ugly performance. So, you know, I read Cooper this morning saying, you know, when he watched the tape, he realized how bad it was. I'm thinking, we didn't have to watch the tape. It was that bad.
Well, he knew it was bad. He said, it was worse than I thought. Yeah. But to me, all the goals, but also all the blown leads. You think about Minnesota being up last night. You think, you know, San Jose was up 5. All of a sudden, it's 5-3. This series, our series here, Tampa, Montreal, a lead hasn't survived longer than 4 minutes. Dallas the other night. So Columbus against Pittsburgh. So we've seen a lot of blown leads so far.
Well, and just, you're right, when it comes to John Cooper. Actually, his post-game comments, you know, right after game one was that he didn't think that they played that poorly. And then a real change of feelings for him, you know, the next day. And I think that just lends to a little bit of an experience for Cooper as well. Not just his team, but overall, there was a sense that Tampa Bay team was not the team that we saw for the majority of the regular season, and especially down the stretch to get home ice advantage. I got to feel that going into game two for Cooper and his players, that they're going to have a different feel here.
Well, there were 9 players and the coach making their NHL playoff debuts, and there's only 6 guys who have any type of playoff experience. That's not not a deep body of work there, with the exception of, say, a Salo, that type of thing. So I think there was a lot of people had jitters going into that game.
But one person within that Tampa organization told me that what disappointed him the most was the players that struggled weren't in that group of guys making their playoff.
The veterans had trouble.
I didn't notice Callahan in that game. I mean, Callahan is supposed to be that emotional leader. He's supposed to be that guy that can turn a game around, not by a great skill play, but by a hit or by a turnover. I didn't notice Callahan in that game. They've got to get a lot better performance from a Callahan. I chuckle when I read the paper here this morning in Tampa Bay, and they said, they need more from Steven Stamkos. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me?
Like a hat trick.
Yeah, like he's got to get 4 goals tonight.
Yes.
They need more from Steve Stamkos.
And he's got to stop a couple, too.
But the gist of the column was because he is everything to the team, you know, and he really is.
Well, and I heard Cooper address the question yesterday, and he just said when you're a superstar player like that, you always expect of yourself that you can give something more to get your team over the hump. And that's a daunting challenge, but he played pretty well in game one.
He's pretty young.
Whatever in terms of confidence Lindback was able to get to finish out the regular season, I'm sorry, he lost it in game one. And I don't care. I don't care. What I care about is the feeling you have when you're on the bench or on the ice and that guy is between the pipes. And there is a sense of uneasiness, nervousness. It's his body language. And I get it. I'm not stripping him of giving his team a chance to win.
You just did strip
him. There is really, in game two, a lack of confidence in him. Okay? And he has to win game two.
They have nowhere else to go.
Yeah, they do. They've got the Latvian.
But anyway, listen, I talked to a Tampa Bay
They've got
person this morning.
Gudzlewskis. They do.
The guy
they've got Gudlevskis.
Or the Latvian.
Good
Kristers and Gudlevskis.
And Gudlevskis.
And guess what?
They've got him.
Montreal are praying they're going to see the Latvian because that means they've got total control of this series. And Tampa Bay are saying we're in big, big trouble. But talking to a Tampa Bay organization guy, he said, because seriously, I mean, are we going to win with Lynn back? To your point, if people are saying that, what do you think the players are thinking?
Well,
to
again,
my point.
It's
your point.
What we talked about.
You made one good point. Hey, you made a great point
Thank you.
Today.
Thank
it's
you.
What we talked about with Philadelphia. Starting your backup guy, it makes the challenge that much greater. And, you know, I thought there was a couple of the goals that he probably would have wanted back that were maybe savable. But he stopped a lot. And the play in front of him was dreadful. And Cooper said it. He said, you know, you can pick apart the goaltender's performance, but we made him make a lot of saves he probably shouldn't have to make that turned into goals. And it was colossal errors on their part that led to Montreal's success.
I used to turn to Millard for goaltending advice. But after watching your act last night, your three-hour act last night, I'm turning to you on all goaltending.
I'm getting my agent's card now.
I'm going to you for all goaltending questions.
For those that don't know, and none of you would.
How would they?
Yes. Scotty was negotiating a minor hockey position for his son last night, who's going to play double A. So
and congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
Mark. It's Hockey Central, presented by Lexus on the Park on Sportsnet.ca, Sportsnet 59 of the Fan, and Sportsnet Television. Darren Millard, Nick Kiprios, Doug McLean, and Scott Moore. And the Montreal Canadiens extra players just wrapping up their morning skate, going through a little bit of a scrimmage and obviously getting a nice little sweat on. It was an optional skate this morning for the Canadiens. Yesterday, they spent almost the entire practice working on the power play, and they put in, I think, three new wrinkles, all of which, by the way, didn't focus on P.K. Subban shooting the puck, but other options. That's a power play that has struggled mightily coming into the playoffs and didn't score in game one.
0 for 25 now through nine games.
Right. And look, when your power play is struggling, what's the first thing you turn to? As a coach, when your power play is struggling, you turn first to getting the puck to the point and shooting the puck. If you are struggling as a power play...
But they didn't go with that.
Exactly. That's my point. And when you're struggling and you start to try to be more cute and by going down low... be careful. And it may... Look, they
so
will...
You're saying be careful, but that's exactly what they've done.
Yeah, but they're going to say, okay, we're going to work down low, but number one priority is we still... If you have lanes to get the puck from the point through, if you're not being screened out or blocked out, you get the puck through from the point, and we'll take our chances there first, then making cute plays down low. Because the type of players Pacioretty are, and even Vanek is a puck deflector, and he's a rebound guy. Vanek is as good at picking up rebounds around the paint as anybody in the league.
It's really rare that you have playoff success if you don't get your power play going. It can happen, but you look now what it does to another team in terms of, let's face it, it's all about the physicality of a series going deep and punishing and wearing teams down. You don't have that same feeling if you've got a potent power play that you could face by taking a bad penalty. And right now, that's the only thing missing from the Montreal Canadiens right now. If they would have scored a goal here, it wouldn't have even been close.
And there's no...
And that's just an element that they got to find a way to get it going
and
here.
And it will get... When you've got Vanek and Pacioretty, and you can throw a Briere into the mix, and you've got Dernay, and you've got Marcon... I mean, there's no way this power play is not going to find its way. And I think it finds its way in this series against Tampa Bay.
Just a footnote on it. It wasn't a very effective practice, I will tell you that.
Why did you become such a guru of practice?
I'll tell Coach Glatt you're second-guessing him.
When pucks charted the practice?
Well, when pucks are skipping over sticks and they can't make passes.
That's bad ice, Darren. It's bad ice.
You can only do power play on good ice. It's
would
not
you agree
good.
That if you get into those nights where your power play is struggling for several games and all of a sudden you get three or four chances and you can't capitalize, that it can take away some of the energy and momentum from your 5-on-5?
What you've got to do when your power play is struggling at 0-25 is you sure as hell don't practice it a 5-on-4. You go 5-on-0 and get some goals. And if they don't score 5-on-0, they're in real trouble.
And
you tell Boot I let some in.
Get the shooter tutor out there. Then.
So Montreal works in their power play exclusively. Tampa Bay just went through a regular line rush practice. Didn't really seem to zero in on anything. So does that tell you that they're just hoping that the jitters are out of the way and they'll come back with a better performance just based on getting game one out of the way, Scott?
Well, they had three video sessions or three team meetings yesterday, before, after, and then last night. So maybe that's where they did all the all of that work. But, you know, the one thing that in talking to some of the coaches is that they just said it's the worst performance we've had all year. And that's what you try to build on, is that it can't get any worse. It can only get better. And you were still just a goal away. Now, as we mentioned earlier, the problem with that is you may not get a night where you get four goals on Carey Price again.
And coaches are totally paranoid. And I was surprised when you said they did the power play, because typically at playoff time, you're totally paranoid to show the other team anything on the ice. 90% of all work, 99% of all system work is done in the video session or off ice.
What's to stop somebody from Tampa Bay from watching that yesterday?
Nothing. Nothing.
I don't know what true secrets you're giving away. In all honesty, power play is nothing more than a series of 2-on-1s.
You can't
do
that.
That's it. It's creating 2-on-1s in key situations, and that's not a secret to anybody.
But what it is, though, is you say, okay, look, they're trying to work. If anything, what you do is you can prep them. Say, hey, they're trying to make Vanek the focal point, or they're trying to make Pacioretty the focal point, or they're trying to make PK the focal point. And you spend a little time with your penalty killers touching on that. But again, you've got your penalty kill system. But of things that have changed the most in the NHL in the last 10 years is penalty killing systematic approach. It's become, the teams spend a lot of time on penalty killing.
And that's where Montreal got a big goal.
That's right.
Killing a penalty.
On their penalty kill, Gianta. Yeah. I remember
you
years.
That Victor Hedman's going to have a horrible pinch down the wall, though, to create a 2-on-1 back? Can you find that out watching a practice? No.
No, but you look at tendencies as to where they're positioning their low guys, that do you have a chance to intercept a puck? Or do you have, you know, I mean, they look at law. I mean, I think they've become pretty technical on the penalty kill. I really do.
I can remember series years ago, and they were great rivalries, intense rivalries, where it was like Boston, Montreal, where teams would go to the league and say, we don't want them in the building when we're practicing.
Yeah. You know, totally.
Often an assistant coach would go sit up in a corner. Oh, yeah. But that was more games.
I remember being thrown out of a building. Yeah. I was with Detroit, we were playing Minnesota, and I remember them saying, no, you're out. Yeah. You're not allowed in here.
To Mac's point, though, you want to read a team, you watch the video, and you watch it over a course of a long period of time here. And that's where you're truly going to find out a team or an individual's tendencies.
Montreal wasn't giving away any secrets there or in reinventing the wheel with anything special that would surprise
Tampa.
Here's
what they gave away. It gave away to the Lightning penalty killers that they're really concerned about their power play. And it's got to be a rallying cry for Tampa. We got to keep this power play off the board, because if we keep them off the board, we have a chance.
Along with Scott Morrison, Doug McLean, Nick Kiprias, I'm Darren Millard here in Tampa Bay covering the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Montreal Canadiens searching for a 2-0 lead. It's Hockey Central presented by Lexus on the Park. There's a couple of scrums the other night. Stamkos went after Markov.
Which is great.
But there's no real hatred. There's no real animosity in this series.
They're division
rivals. I know it's a new division with Tampa Bay moving up to the Atlantic Division, what used to be the old Northeast. But you don't really sense that hatred.
Are you saying little kids in Montreal don't grow up dreaming of beating the Lightning in the playoffs?
Yes.
But even in the crowd, it's like a happy. I mean, you see the Montreal and Tampa fans in the concourses, and it's like a love fest. I mean, you've got to develop hatred really fast. You do in the playoff
time.
But
do you sense that in this series?
Oh, no, not at all.
I think partway through that second period, and that Stamkos hit, I thought, was a bit of a turning point for Tampa, that a lot more energy. Then he comes down, rather, and scores that incredible goal on the end-to-end rush, started to get some physicality into it. So it maybe tonight will be a little bit different.
The onus is on Tampa Bay to do that, though, because they were average on their emotional chart in game one, and they need to drive it up. I'm with you that it wasn't where it needs to be for Tampa Bay.
For a playoff game.
Yeah, emotionally it's got to be there, and they can't have bonehead plays like they had the other night. I mean, you look at the time.
But do you agree with Nick that Tampa Bay needs some type of emotion more than Montreal?
If you can't get it from the atmosphere that's in this building and the fact that the series is over if you lose tonight, you better have
to. But more than that, Stamkos end-to-end rush.
But more than that, you can't have a fourth-line guy, Briere, who's been in the doghouse all year long, have the time to make the play he made and have a veteran like Brewer playing off him that far. I mean, Pekat was responsible too, but Brewer, Carl, these guys have, they're not kids. I mean, forget the excuse of lack of playoff experience. Those are their veteran guys that didn't show up. They got to show up tonight.
Lindback is going to play in game two of this series, trying to redeem himself after giving up five goals in an overtime loss in game one. But we don't know the status of Andre Palat as of right now. It sounds like he's going to be a game time decision. All indications are that it's a concussion. What does that do to Tampa Bay's lines and offensive performance?
Well, he's their leading scorer, so it affects it. I mean, he's really their second leading scorer because Stamkos is the guy. But
Palat's 26th goal of the season the other night.
Yeah, apparently they tell me it's a concussion, and if it is a concussion, he won't play. Killorn can move up there, and it's fairly seamless. You know, Killorn's been pretty good for them. You know, so you know what? It's a loss. It's a loss, and he plays with emotion, this kid, and he plays with physicality. So it's exactly what we're talking about. It's a loss for them.
And you have to change your top line. And all of a sudden, as you say, Killorn moves up. He was good with Stamkos, especially on that tying goal, 4-4 goal in the third period. But you're taking a lot of offense out of a lineup that doesn't have a ton of it.
And a guy that can play in the middle of the ice. And that's something that Montreal dominated. They pushed to the wall, and they weren't able to use any type of skill up the middle of the ice. Even Stamkos, obviously a world-class play, but it happens on the outside of the perimeter.
Were you surprised they didn't try that more?
Well, I just want to go back to the lines one more before we move on. Is that's why Fapula and Callahan's line have got to be so much. People are telling us and bragging to us that they have two first lines. Sorry, I didn't see two first lines the other night.
Well, Fapula, we did. We saw Darnay and we saw Plekanec.
Yeah, we saw glimpses. We saw glimpses of Fapula the other night. But that is a line brought nothing to the table for me in a critical game. Don't give me playoff experience with them either. There's lots there.
It was just a flat team right out of the gate, and they got some energy in the third period, but still too many mistakes.
Montreal wants to score some goals in the power play with a man advantage. Take advantage of that. That goes back to the regular season slump, and that's why they're probably more concerned than you normally would be after game number one. But beyond the man advantage, does Montreal have any real concerns from game one? Because they dominated the shots. They dominated territorially. They played a pretty good game.
We have to be careful here when we're criticizing how bad Tampa Bay were and give Montreal credit for the way they performed. They forechecked tremendously. Their neutral zone defense was solid. Nick mentioned their centerman being so good. Look, they had a really strong game. Price, to me, it was a 5-1, 5-2 game. But Price had an off night till overtime. But I would be darn happy with the way they played.
You're on the road. It's game one. And you hold them to the shots that they did.
Totally.
What, did they get a shot in the last 14 minutes?
No. But the four goals came on the first 14 shots.
That's pretty impressive.
It was.
I mean, the team's built, obviously, to be on the right side of the puck, and how can you argue that they weren't in game one? That's a huge credit to Therrien and our buddy Girard.
You know what I want to see tonight, though, from this group? I want to see Cooper try to get Stamkos and try to get Fapula and Callahan out there against Weaver. I mean, they've got to try to do that, or Bouillon. They got to try to do that. You can't. Okay, so we're going to play our top two lines against their top two, and we're going to play our top four against their top two, and we're going to go fourth line. Fourth line cost you the game. Fourth line cost you the winner. Try to get your best guys against their worst. Try to do some juggling and matching. I didn't like it the other night.
Every goal that Montreal scored, there was a breakdown, horrific breakdown by the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I'm not taking anything away from Montreal, but when you see an opening and you're able to capitalize, good on Montreal.
Are
for
you
doing
not going to try to get Stamkos and Fapula against their fifth and sixth defensemen? Odd time, just the odd shift.
Well, one of the things both coaches talked about, and it's to your point, Mac, is that Montreal had a really strong forecheck, spent a lot of time in the offensive zone, and Tampa had a real tough time getting the puck in and keeping it in the Montreal end.
Did you guys get to the in-arena announcer? Who is keeping track of the season totals of the players?
You got to leave him alone.
Not the first of the playoffs
right
for
now,
Steven Stamkos.
He's critiquing us. He's in section 122, and he's waiting for you to make a mistake.
We got to take a break here. When we continue from Tampa on Hockey Central, presented by Lexus on the Park, Montreal and Anaheim going for 2-0 series lead. We'll update you on Ryan Getzlaf's status, and it's game one between Boston and Detroit, original six series from the Atlantic Division. That's coming up on Hockey Central, live from Tampa.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
It is Hockey Central, live from the Stanley Cup playoffs. Darren Millard along with Nick Kiprios, Doug McLean, and Scott Morrison. And we're missing out because they're finger cooking today at the...
Not happy about that.
At the shop.
I'm tweeting.
On Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Boston Pizza, bringing in lunch today, and we hope that you guys enjoy it because, well, you'll get your first choice. Because
they deliver
Mac,
down here?
No, not well, they could deliver down here, but you guys are usually the first ones in there.
As you know.
Boston Pizza, I would be really impressed if you could deliver.
As you know, Friday is my favorite time.
Yes, it is.
Of the show because I do the finger eating after the show on my way to the airport.
We have a whiteout happening tonight, so they're going to be handing out these T-shirts. So you'll see the regular what started in Winnipeg at the old Winnipeg Arena back in the day, and went
now,
to Phoenix.
This one going to end up in your basement like the rest of everything.
Maybe.
I saw one empty seat. I saw one seat with one missing.
Well, that's where this one came from.
Let's make sure.
I am the
back.
Thunder.
So the poor guy paid $150 for his ticket, and he's not going
to
get a
I'd
shirt.
I'd love to get a couple.
Oh, no, it's
t-shirts.
Happened six times in outdoor games.
I know.
With sea cushions.
And they're all at my cottage.
Sticky fingers, Millard.
The shirt has been returned, by the
Ben
way.
Ben Bishop was on the ice this morning. As much talk as there is about Lindback and Gudzlevskis, we have Ben Bishop on the ice. Gudlevskis, you're campaigning to get in, but Bishop took some shots today.
No, he didn't take shots.
Just took a couple.
He did take shots.
No,
but
the goalie coach threw pucks at him. That's not shots when the goalie coach throws pucks at you. I'm sorry.
Just to the block. He was on his knees, just to the blocker side, and it's the other side where he's hurt. And Cooper said yesterday, he said, this series is going to have to be extended significantly for him to possibly get in. So that's not sounding encouraging.
And as a goalie grew.
Yes.
When you're throwing the pucks at your goalie, he's not near quite ready. He's not ready to play.
Anaheim looks for a 2-0 series lead over the Dallas Stars tonight, and Ryan Getzlaf will play despite that severe gash that required too many stitches.
Shocking.
To count.
Oh. Shocking that he sounds like he's all right.
Shocking that he's going to play.
He tweeted
shocking.
A couple of pictures, and he's no box of chocolates right now.
And as his teammate said today, he's lucky he's married and has a couple of kids.
Yeah, Boudreaux said,
his face looks that bad.
And Boudreaux said, I don't even want to look at him. But it's amazing that he's going to play.
Happy
it's
for him.
Amazing that nothing was broken. Oh. That was all cuts and bruises.
And tough.
Phenomenal.
He is one tough cookie.
He's going to get chirped for sure in game two with that face.
I mean, that's the difference probably between still having a chance to win a Stanley Cup with nothing broken, orbital bone or cheekbone or anything, and being able to continue on in the playoffs and legitimately have an opportunity to win this thing.
Yeah, being devastated. And it would have been a devastating loss if he was out for any amount of time.
And what's it do for his teammates when they say, that's how much he wants to win? That's why he's won two gold medals, a Stanley Cup, and still a young guy. Boudreaux made that comment today. I mean, if you're a teammate of Getzlaf, you're saying, wow, this guy will do whatever it takes.
You know what, too? In the last few years, haven't been kind to him in terms of production, and you kind of wondered a little bit.
Who?
Getzlaf.
I mean, he's the second-leading scorer in the National Hockey League this year.
No, prior to this. Yeah.
Prior to this, Darren, where he was scoring like 15 goals. And
we have to listen better when Nick's talking.
Pay attention. Stop stealing T-shirts, first of all, in the building, and you'd be able to listen.
We have to listen better to you. I missed your first point, too.
And then he comes back with a great year, signs the massive contract, and then has a career year. Did you get all of that?
Yeah. Ditto. Boston and Detroit. The final series starts tonight with game one.
This one you can tell that... And I really like Claude Julien, and the more you listen to him this time of year, he's a pretty smart guy, and it is what it is. And right now, when you've got a team that's got everything to to lose and nothing to gain, and then the opposite for Detroit. It's tough. It's not easy when everybody obviously knows that it should be Boston that advances here. But there's something about Detroit right now that you got to be wary about.
I liked what Julian talked about. We've been able to win 7-game series on a regular basis. So he's putting the point there. This could be a tough. I love Babcock's comments. We're a good team. We're a pretty good. Don't just give us the underdogs. We're a good team right now.
And the players were saying the pressure's all, to your point, Nick, the pressure's all on Boston. We've got nothing to lose. And they did play very well despite being decimated by injuries. No Zetterberg in this series. No Erickson on the back end in this series. But the one thing, Boston, it's well and good to say we've played 7-game series 3 years in a row. They've had to go to 7 games in the first round in series they were expected to win. And we all know they had to pull out a miracle last year to survive. So maybe they have to learn a lesson from that. Don't tempt the fates too often.
And they've used 3 kids on the blue line all year because of the injury to Seidenberg and McQuaid. How do those 3 kids, Krug has been unbelievable. Burkowski has been unbelievable for them. I mean, they're young kids back there. Hamilton. Can they be as good against a speedy Detroit team? And then, I think they can.
And then on the other side of the blue line, Cronwall's got his work cut out for him.
Yes.
I think he's had a heck of a season. Told he took on such a leadership role, especially with Datsyuk and Zetterberg out much of the regular season here. And he's going to have to be punishing here against a very physical team. Lucic, Krejci, Iginla, all these guys play a physical game this time of year.
So is that smart for him?
It's
going to
be tough.
Matt, for him
you got to match up.
But how does he play a physical game against that many physical guys? I think it's like knocking your head against a wall so many.
Wow.
It's like, hitting yourself over the head with a hammer. I mean, I don't think he should play that game.
Them just come to the net 100 miles an hour?
I think he should play a smart body position game, save his energy.
No.
They need him.
Not that guy.
Over Lucic. That really helps the Detroit Red Wings. Because Lucic will go right through him, over him, around him. Don't waste your time playing.
This guy picks his spots. He picks his spots, and he can get under the skin of his opponents, and that is very much a part of a 7-game series.
When you're expected to play 23, 24 minutes a game, and you're trying to, when you're 5'11", and as I give him big, he's as tough as nails.
He is.
But he's got to play a really smart game.
How does Detroit win this
series? Picking your spots, though, is a smart game.
Detroit wins
if Jimmy Howard is as good as Tuukka Rask, or is Jimmy Howard's the best goalie in the series. That's how they win.
And is that going to even be enough? I don't know.
So how do they win?
I don't think they win. I think, and that's with all due respect to the way Detroit Red Wings have performed. I just think Boston are bigger, stronger. But the only way they can win is if their speed bothers the Boston
Bruins.
Turn
it into a speed game.
If they can turn into a speed game. And that's my point on Cronwall. They've got to play a speed game. They do not match up physically. Speed, speed, speed. And what you said, Howard's got to stand on his head, and I don't think he can be as good as Rask.
And we have game number 2 tonight between Tampa Bay and the Montreal Canadiens. The only road team to win so far in the playoffs are the Habs. But they won that game at the Forum. Tampa Bay Times Forum. So it's a
very
good
clever. Very clever.
That's the way you're going to end this week, seriously?
You got to tell people that Montreal used to be called the Forum for our relatively new breed of fans. Maybe they forgot that the old Forum in the 60s was the Forum.
Who wins tonight?
70s.
Who wins tonight here?
I'll say 1-1. We go back to Montreal. I said it was going to be a long series, so if Tampa Bay is going to make me look good, they got to win game 2.
I think Montreal wins. I think Price is even better. I think he goes from overtime to the first period. I think Montreal go up 2-0.
Lindback.
I really hope I'm wrong because I want to come back to Tampa for game 5.
I'm with Mac. I think the goaltending tells the tale tonight. Montreal.
When we talk to you again,
who did you
Central
pick?
At noon, I took Montreal.
Okay.
I'm the only one Tampa?
Yeah.
That's fine.
I made good points today, though.
We just didn't listen.
What's the goalie's name again?
Goalie Lat.
Points.
Connected.
You know, goalie Bob. This one's
we'll chat with you and connected tonight from Tampa Bay.